Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of Callin' It, recording Friday, December 11th, just past the 3 o'clock hour Eastern time. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. It's been a while. We had a Thursday Patriots game. That means my life goes to hell for 3 days, but I had to get this one in because there's a ton to talk about this week, Lebowitz.
Yes, there is. Big week for the Patriots, not for the best reasons. A lot going on in the news. People that, you know, we've hated in the past, giving us more reasons to hate them. So it's, definitely been a big week.
It has been, but we're actually going to start in the NBA because that's where the big news of Friday is. And of course, it's Kyrie Irving being an obnoxious tool. So quick recap, I think it was it last week, like middle of last week, right, that Kyrie was supposed to talk to Brooklyn media for the first time this season?
Yeah, and he released some statement, and I honestly forget what it said, but it was, you know, in typical Kyrie fashion, extremely pretentious and just needless, and it's one of those things that you read and you're like, what is he thinking? Does he think that people will accept this stuff?
Right.
So, and obviously no one accepted it, so.
So basically, in short, it said that he's tired of the media shifting his narrative, so he's not going to speak to the media this year, and he'll communicate through press releases, and that this was the first of a series of press releases. So him and the Nets got hit with a fine. I think it was a $25,000 fine for not living up to the media requirements. And then that led to another statement today. This was on his Instagram. He opens with a Malcolm X quote about, you know, I've had enough of someone else's propaganda. I'm for truth. I'm for justice. I'm for whatever benefits humanity as a whole. Then he says, I pray we use this, quote, fine money for the marginalized communities in need, especially seeing where our world is presently. And then in parentheses, I am, and then out of parentheses, I am here for peace, love, and greatness. So stop distracting me and my team and appreciate the art with a capital A. We move different over here. I do not talk to pawns. My attention is worth more. Star of David emoji, yelling emoji. Okay. First and foremost, yeah, the fine money should go to a good cause. That's what most leagues do. The fines are donated to charities, a handful of charities that are picked before the year by the Players Association.
And he knows that.
Who knows what Kyrie knows at this point? Oh, no, he's the vice president of the Players Association. He should know
so,
that.
So he obviously knows that. I think it's known by most. The NFL does that. When you get fined, it's not like they're pocketing the fine money. It goes to charity. He knows this.
So we'll put that aside other than to say, it feels like he put that in there as a, you can't criticize me because this is a good deed sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so absolutely ridiculous. You can break down the entire, you know, quote. He's quoting Malcolm X, which, I mean, people are going to take that as an indirect comparison. He's indirectly comparing himself to Malcolm X, which, yes, you know, given that context, so ridiculous. Malcolm X died for his cause and dedicated his life to that cause. You have a platform because you play basketball. You get paid like $30+ million a year, whatever it is. One of your obligations is to talk to the media. It has nothing to do with activism. I don't understand why he's making that connection. And then he's talking about the media being a distraction. You know what's a distraction? Statements like this, the way you act in general, that's the distraction. But he still can't wrap his head around the fact that maybe in at least some situations, he's the problem.
And I mean, just I don't talk to pawns. My attention is worth more is just so demeaning. And look, I don't know if he meant this or not. There's a sizable portion of the media that is Jewish, I would assume, especially in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
To call the media pawns and then throw the Jewish star emoji in there was just it's just I don't know if he meant it or not, but it's just so cringy. It's such a bad optic. Just to call the media pawns in general, like, who's pawns? The whole point of the media talking to you is so you can tell your side of the story. By not telling your side of the story, you allow the media to completely run with the narrative, as we are doing right now, case in point. So, yeah, to call the media pawns, he's not entirely wrong, but that's kind of the setup. The reason that, as somebody who is a beat reporter, we talk to players is because, look, I can write 1,000 words on why I think X player sucks. Maybe there's something I'm missing because I'm not in the locker room. I don't know the play calls. I never played the game. Maybe there's something I'm missing that player can tell me. And then, boom, I don't write the story about the player X sucks. Instead, I write, here's why player X is struggling. Instead, Kyrie is just letting the media run wild because he won't talk to them. And then, in the same breath, complaining that the media doesn't give him a chance. Dude, just answer the questions. We're willing to listen to you. Just answer the questions.
There's just never any accountability with this guy. I think that's the biggest problem.
Yes.
There's never any introspective, you know, he never looks inward. You know, he never looks at, you know, maybe I did something wrong here. He can apologize.
No,
he can give those.
He's the smartest man on the planet. Nobody comes close.
And him thinking that makes him one of the dumbest people on the planet, because there's a big discrepancy between him and the smartest person on the planet. He's just so pretentious. And guess what? When you don't talk to the media, your teammates have to talk for you. And that becomes tiresome for them. They don't like answering those questions constantly because they're doing their obligation, getting paid, you know, unless you're Kevin Durant, less than he is. They're filling their media obligations, but you're not. They're doing it for you in a way. I don't know how you could have the career that Kyrie Irving's had. He's a talented player. He's won championships. He's been a big part of really one team. And look at, you know, how he's burnt bridges at the last two franchises he was with, and then think, you know, the media's treating me so unfairly. Their media, and it's just it's him deflecting any and all blame that he deserves, and just saying, you guys are out to get me. You guys are out to get me. So what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna, you know, inflict this. I'm gonna self-inflict this injury here for me, and cause you guys to hate me even more, cause the fans to hate me even more, and get this season started on a turbulent note before it even starts. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Good luck, Steve Nash. Good luck. The guy's gonna age like a president this year.
So you actually did make one good point. You made a bunch of good points there, but what I want to go back to is, you know, now the teammates have to answer for it, and now the questions become Kyrie this, Kyrie that, and it's not a perfect comparison because the circumstances surrounding the player were different. But I remember when Josh Gordon first got to New England, when I was my first year on the Patriots beat, and they were super careful with him in terms of media access. He got basically 3 questions a week, and that was like every other week because they'd put him on the injury report so he didn't have to talk. Again, very different situation. It wasn't Gordon not wanting to talk. It was a guy who was in a high-stress environment, who probably shouldn't have been in a high-stress environment at the time, and they wanted to take it easy on him. Like that, I'm not faulting the Patriots or Josh Gordon for not talking. What I do kind of remember from that I think is relevant here is, well, Josh Gordon's the story, and we needed to find some way to talk about him. So it was, we'll ask the quarterback about him. We'll ask the other receivers about him. We'll ask the coaches about him. And you could tell, like, Philip Dorsett talked every day. He was great about it. Philip Dorsett would talk every day, and he would take a bunch of questions. He was super good with the media. But you could tell that after about a week or two, he just got tired. It was like, you guys are asking me about Josh. I don't know what more I can say. You guys keep asking me about this guy. I'm not him. And there's this kind of this understanding of, we knew he couldn't say anything more, but he knew we had to ask the questions, and it just turned into the stalemate, and both sides get frustrated. So what's going to happen here is Kyrie's going to burn out his teammates. And in some ways, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in that the media is going to start to resent not just Kyrie, but the Nets and the other players on the team, because they are making it unnecessarily harder. Kyrie is making it unnecessarily harder for the media to do their jobs. So the exact thing he thinks he's the exact problem he thinks he's fighting, that he thinks he's this valiant warrior against, dare I say, fake news and a negative spin. He's kind of creating that now. I'm saying it's the whole fake news. I really don't want to go down this road, but in the current climate, to call the media pawns and say you won't talk to them because they won't fairly share your narrative, for a guy in a league that's supposed to be kind of, you know, the open on the open-minded side of things, it's just so, like, what are you doing?
And if he wanted to spread awareness, here's what he could do. You remember Marshawn Lynch? You know, I'm here because I won't get fined.
Sure.
I mean, that doesn't really solve any problems. It doesn't spread awareness. It's literally him just fulfilling his right. duty, which he's contractually obligated to do.
And you
Kyrie
know
Irving, if Kyrie Irving's going to, you know, say that this is because of activism or whatever, why don't you use the Zoom meeting and do what Jaylen Brown did?
Exactly.
Instead of answering questions, say, I want to shed light on the George Floyd incident. I want to shed light on the Breonna Taylor incident. Instead, he's sending out these you know, press releases.
Passive aggressive.
And he's turned the spotlight on him. And guess what? The media and the fans are not the only people who are rolling their eyes at this. If you don't think ownership, the front office, players, coaches on that team see this and say, are saying, no, this is fine. Kyrie's just a misunderstood dude. No, they're saying this is ridiculous. You got it. Like, this is a league full of activists. And guess what? No one else in this league is doing what you're doing. So what's your excuse besides being a schmuck? That's all there is. That's all there is for him. He just likes to be the center of attention. He likes to create conflict. It follows him wherever he goes. And I think sooner or later, the Nets fans who are excusing this now or are saying, oh, it doesn't matter, they're going to see. They're going to be in for it because this isn't going to remain stable. Maybe you can sweep that sort of thing under the rug for the first few months of the season, but any sign of instability, any bump in the road, guess what? You're going to have a problem on your hands because you had the biggest ego in the NBA on that team.
He's the NBA's Taylor Swift. He wants to cause drama. No, and we'll get to Taylor in a little bit. But, you made some good points there in that either between Marshawn Lynch and what Marshawn Lynch did, he didn't want to talk to the media, but he knew he had to give him a story. And at the end of the day, there was a story, but he didn't really have to talk. The media was happy. They got what they needed, and he didn't really have to do much. So I think that's a, excellent way to handle the situation.
Didn't call out the media. He also wasn't mean to them personally, on the level that Kyrie was.
And then you have the other extreme, which is, I think, also, I think it takes a lot of balls to do what Jaylen Brown does. That's the thing about that strategy is that I don't know that Kyrie has the fortitude to do that. He goes up there and he'll answer one or two basketball questions, but it's really, here's the issue of the day. It's police reform, it's economic equality, it's educational reform, whatever. And I mean, the guy absolutely knows what he's talking about. It's been said for a long time, Jaylen Brown is going to leave a great legacy, and ultimately basketball probably ends up as a footnote of that. So I don't know that Kyrie has it in him to hold the kind of press conference that Jaylen Brown can do. I mean, I think that's one of many things that makes him an incredibly special person. But you're right. If he's really that worried about those causes, get up there and say, hey, we're going to talk about the death penalty. We're going to talk about, housing equality or whatever issue he happens to feel strongly about. So
for what it's worth,
just a cop out at this point.
And for what it's worth, Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving, if reports are correct, they did not get along when they were in Boston together.
Nope.
And Jaylen Brown, again, he's a guy who's been on the front lines. He's been, at these, peaceful protests. He's been speaking up, and he's been putting himself out there without being a detriment to, one, the cause, and two, to the NBA or his organization. He's somebody who, He is someone who's actually very smart, unlike Kyrie Irving, but he's not nearly as pretentious. Not to compare the two too much, but
no, I mean, I think Jaylen Brown is who Kyrie Irving thinks he is. I think that
exactly.
There's some truth to that. And I will say, you mentioned them not getting along. I remember when they were talking about canceling the bubble, right? Because the players wanted to go and they wanted to be involved in the Black Lives Matter protests that were happening all across the country. And Jaylen kind of stood up and said, look, we have a great platform here. I'm all for canceling it if people are actually going to go get involved. But if we're going to cancel just to go sit at home, that's not worth it. Right. Jaylen Brown walks the walk. He puts money where his mouth is. Kyrie Irving, I think, like I just said, I don't know that he has the spheres to do that. And I wonder if part of the problem was that Kyrie's all talk. He's not going to back it up. Jaylen Brown, if that guy says something, I believe him 100%. I think he means what he says. I think he will back up what he says. I think his actions reflect his words. Couldn't be further from the truth with Kyrie. I do want to jump over to football, though, because we got to talk about the game last night. Patriots and Rams. As good as the Patriots looked against the Chargers in that building on Sunday, Lebowitz. Well, Thursday night was rough. And yeah. let's just jump right into the quarterbacks here. I think it's an unpopular take, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Everybody wants to debate Cam Newton versus Jarrett Stidham, who should be the starter for the last three games of the season. That's fine and dandy. I don't think it matters. I really don't. Okay. I think in the grand scheme of things, the post-Brady era, rebuilding this team, you know, who's the next guy? Cam's the next guy. They can build an offense around him. No, Stidham's the next guy. They took him in the draft, and he's shown promise. What if it's neither one of them? You know, there's what? 40 competent, and I use that word loosely. There's 40 competent quarterbacks right now in the NFL. You're going to have another three or four coming up in the draft. Of that, and you can't realistically get all of them, but let's say of that 45-player pool, 20 of them are obtainable. I don't think that that's too much of a stretch. 15 to 20 of them are obtainable. Of that group, these are the two guys you're going to hitch your wagon to. So Stidham, Newton, I could care less. The future of the New England Patriots, the next Patriots quarterback to win a playoff game, is not currently on the roster. That's my take.
I think that's a good take. I thought you were going to go with Brian Hoyer there for a second.
See, people are going to think that because I wrote that article back in October, and I have a tweet out that basically hints at that. I got you with the hook. That's called the hook.
You did. You did.
Dogala. Jake Dogala is the man, Lebowitz.
He is, of course. I 6'7"
of his bum ass.
I think the one issue with that logic is we don't really know enough about Jarrett Stidham to make that statement. You need to get him into a game. I just think you need to get him into a game to see what he's really capable of. We've had very limited, a very limited sample size of what he can do. But I'll say this, last night, given the circumstances, he didn't look that bad. I think, if anything, he looked better than Cam Newton, at least from a pass throwing standpoint. Not hard. And again, that's more by default than anything. But still, we haven't seen enough of this guy. And obviously, you have to trust Bill Belichick's judgment when it comes to, you know, if he's ready or not. But this isn't a playoff team. I think last night's loss for the Patriots proves that. And Cam Newton will not be a Patriot next year. I think that seems to be conclusive at this point. At least I'd be shocked if he is. Why wouldn't you just try to ride it out with Stidham these next few games to see if he can do it? I know that Belichick and McDaniels are on record that Cam's their guy and that's not going to happen. But I guess I just don't see an upside for keeping Cam Newton in there. And even though there's not much of an upside to put Stidham in there, and you know, people are probably right that he isn't the answer, why not just throw him out there and try to find out? Why not experiment at that position just a little bit? Because he's going to be on your roster next year and Newton isn't. You should just see what he can do because, you know, although the Patriots put together four wins in 5 weeks, you know, that wasn't because of Cam Newton. He did enough. He didn't turn the ball over too much like he has in the games in which they've lost. But, you know, you're kind of walking on eggshells when you put him in there, just hoping he doesn't turn the ball over, hoping he doesn't make a mistake, hoping he can hit his targets. And he's just been wildly inconsistent. I just don't see a downside with going to Stidham. But you're probably right that he's not the answer either. And the next guy to win them a playoff game isn't either of them. But let's just see what he's got well we can.
So I agree with you in that, yeah, switching to Stidham. I mean, look, somebody has to start. My whole take about how it's irrelevant. You know, you can't just – somebody's got to take the snap, obviously. And I don't think – you know, I think getting a look at Stidham would be interesting. My thing is, you mentioned we haven't seen enough. He's among all NFL quarterbacks to throw at least 30 passes since 1970. He is the fourth highest interception percentage. You said he looked good last night. He threw for 27 yards on 7 attempts. He was accurate, but his efficiency was abysmal. He's basically just, he's not turning the ball over anymore, but he's replaced that with just, he's timid. He holds on to the ball too long now. He checks it down.
Yeah, right? I think that, you know, the offensive line for the Patriots looked worse last night than they have all season.
They had a rough night, and that Rams defensive front is very good. But here's the other thing to keep in mind. we've seen Jared Stidham throw like 90 passes this year. I think he's at 99 passes. And, or no, sorry, in his career, I don't know. I had the number last night. I just actually just erased it from my whiteboard. But we've seen him throw a little bit. The coaches are seeing him 3 days a week. They're seeing at practice. They're seeing him in meetings. So the fact that they have the knowledge of him that we don't, and Bill Belichick still comes out Thursday night and cuts the reporter off before he finishes the question, saying Cam Newton is our quarterback. There's another element at play here that we can't see. Now, that could be a couple of things. And I go into this a little bit deeper. My postgame column last night, 98.5thesportshub.com, you can check it out. Maybe it's just because Cam's the unquestioned leader of the locker room. And if you pull him, maybe you alienate guys who you need down the road. And it's not worth putting Stidham in for the rest of this year to lose the guys who bought in on Cam. Maybe that's it. And I think that's fair. I think that's perfectly fair for Bill to have the big picture look in mind. Maybe it's just because they know Stidham's awful. Maybe it's because they know Stidham won't play well and they want to trade him this offseason. And they don't need him to put those bad plays on tape. Maybe they just totally have him written off. It was weird. So Belichick was asked the quarterback question three times last night in three different ways. He was asked if he would consider making a quarterback change. That was by ESPN's Mike Reese. Bill cut him off. Cam's our quarterback. Ben Volen got the second question in the presser. What has Cam done? What have you seen from Cam that you're keeping him as the starter? Bill, I just answered that question. Cam's the quarterback. Mark Daniels, I thought, he got the third question. He had a very interesting way of trying to get Bill to kind of budge on this. He didn't bring up Cam at all. He said, what have you seen from Jared Stidham in game this year in terms of his growth and development? And Bill said, you know, he's playing better. He gave the typical answer. He's getting better every week. But then at the end, he said, but that's not really the point. Mm-hmm. And that's weird, right? That's like a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
That's kind of cryptic. And then he was asked to clarify that earlier on Friday. And he basically said, I don't have the full quote in front of me because we haven't gotten the transcript yet. But he basically said, oh, actually, we've gotten it. I just got it in my email. Here's what he said. So what does it mean that that's not really the point? Belichick, sometimes there's situations in a game where you can put somebody in, but we're trying to win the game. So that's what we're here for, is to win the game. So it was obvious. So it was the obvious situation last week with the Chargers. But the point is to try to win. I mean, that's what's important to us. So why doesn't it matter what Jared Stidham is doing on the field? Because we're trying to win the game. That to me is a damning indictment of Jared Stidham. I don't know exactly in what way, but that just feels like him saying, why aren't you putting Stidham in? Because we want to win, when the starting quarterback is playing like he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear. He's saying he essentially, to put it very simply, he has more confidence in Cam Newton than he does Jared Stidham.
But that's not because Cam sucks right now.
I know, but that's saying something. Like that in and of itself tells you, okay, then Jared Stidham must be god awful. He must not be very good in practice. But still, he's in there. He is their backup. They're keeping him on the roster for some reason. And maybe it's simply because, you know, he's not playing, more so because they've created this offense to cater to Cam Newton's ability. And Cam Newton's, you know, ability is much different. His skill set is much different than Jared Stidham's. That's a possibility. But, you know, it really does come back around to the fact that you have a starting quarterback who's played as mediocre as Cam Newton has, and you're still not going with the young guy who we don't really know a lot about. And you said it, they've seen more from Stidham than we have. They're with him every week. They're in the meeting rooms. They see him interact with teammates. They see him, most importantly, on the football field. And Cam Newton is, you know, the leader of that team. Even though he stinks this year, he's the leader of that team. And there's definitely that aspect that goes into it. But again, they're out of the playoffs. Maybe statistically they're not out of the playoffs right now, but everything would have to go right for them. They need to win out at the very least, and they need other teams to lose as well for them to make it in. It just doesn't seem like it's likely to happen. I think Belichick knows that. I think most of the coaches on that staff know that. Why not just give it a shot? Maybe something comes together. You say he Sidham didn't play that great last night. He didn't play unbelievably, but considering the fact that that offensive line was getting torn up and he was facing pressure when he was in, I thought he made decent decisions, and I thought he did, all that he could for the most part. I think at the very least, he looked better than Cam Newton did. He looked more comfortable. So we'll see. I'm on team, let's experiment. That's where I'm at. The playoffs are out of the question. What is there to lose? Let's see what we got with this guy. But again, the reality is they're going to be going after, a Matt Stafford this offseason, or they're going to be drafting somebody else this offseason. Either way, it's definitely about time to start thinking about, free agency moves and what they're going to do in the draft, because this season seems like a loss.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's kind of time and play the kids and all that. And Leibowitz is team experimenting. Leibowitz wants to experiment. That is what he wants to do. He is an experimenter. Put that down in the
notes. Yes, sir.
All right. Speaking of experiments, it's something that turned out to be a really fun experiment. So we're going to close with a music note here. I don't know, like the stars aligned or something. We got a ton of new music last night. It was actually, because these late games, I'm up until 3-4 in the morning. It was actually a great night tip to do that, because as I'm waiting for transcripts to come in and whatever, I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan. I'm really not. But she dropped an album and everybody was excited about that. You got the new Kid Cudi album. Eric Church, who I'm a big fan of, released a new song. He's been due for a new album, but he's apparently releasing it one song at a time. This is like the 7th or 8th single off the album he's released. There were a couple other ones too. I know. The What's Poppin' guy, Jack Harlow, dropped his album too, his debut album, which some people have been anticipating. But the real one that caught my interest was, well, it's not the full Foo Fighters, right? It's just Dave Grohl and, what is he, the drummer? Usually, I don't know, what's the other guy's role?
He's not the drummer, it's that blonde-haired dude. It's either Dave Grohl or the blonde-haired guy who drums for them. Taylor something. I forget the guy's name.
It wasn't Taylor Hawkins, was it?
It wasn't Taylor Hawkins, but he's the drummer. He's the other drummer when it's not Dave Grohl. He's playing on the keyboard, so I'm assuming he does keyboards for
Greg
he does the keys.
Greg Kurstin.
There it is.
So anyway, Dave Grohl and Greg Kurstin announced yesterday that they, instead of doing a Christmas song this year, they are going to do 8 nights of Hanukkah songs, and basically each night they are going to do a cover of a song by a Jewish artist. As somebody who is a big fan of covers, love covers, and has been, I happen to have been on a massive Foo Fighters kick for the last like 2 or 3 weeks. I'm very excited. And they opened with the Beastie Boys and Sabotage, and we'll see what else they come with. They're not telling us what the songs are. But I think it's going to be pretty cool. Although I will say, in terms of the debut one, right, Sabotage, I kind of thought they'd put a Foo Fighters twist on some of these songs. No, they went right in and covered it to the note. I mean, I didn't know Dave Grohl.
He was rapping
with his voice.
He was essentially rapping, like he was. What are they? Mike D or whatever their names are. It was. I mean, Dave Grohl's so versatile musically, so it doesn't shock me whatsoever. But it's awesome to see. Yeah, it was like pretty much identical to the original version.
It
sounded
really
the
was.
Same. So I didn't expect that too. I think Beastie Boys, that's the last band you'd expect. Although, you probably should, because it's kind of just like heavy metal rap in a way, which fits in with what the Foo Fighters kind of do. It's kind of, musically endogenous. It's there's no genre there. So that's kind of cool. But it has me thinking, like, what are some other groups or songs that I hope they do? I think there's a few that we can assume they'll do. But you really, usually Jews know who other Jews are, but you never sit back and think, there's a lot of Jews in music. Like, there's a ton of, like, Simon and Garfunkel, Leonard Cohen, Barbara Streisand, Carole King, Drake.
I hope they don't do Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand, I hope not. Carole King, I could wrap my head around.
Carole King would be interesting. I mean, I think Bob Dylan, they're definitely going to do Bob Dylan.
I really
hope it's like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah, I mean, Knocking on Heaven's Door is a good song.
That's a good one, too.
I'm a fan of the Guns N' Roses version, personally. But like a Rolling Stone is probably the most famous one. I'd much rather him than do a him do a Simon and Garfunkel song. If we're going that era, go Simon and Garfunkel over Bob Dylan day of the week.
Do you think they do Sweet Caroline?
Ooh, Neil Diamond. Well, I hope it's not like Sweet Caroline, but there are.
If they do Neil Diamond, they kind of have to do Sweet. Like, does he have other songs?
Oh yeah, he has a ton of unbelievable songs.
We're Coming to America. Is that him?
Coming to America. He does. He does. Let's see. I'm gonna Google. He does. Come to America. Heartlight. He has a lot of. There's one song that he has that I'm trying to think of, but I can't. And it's a phenomenal song though. But
go ahead.
But Neil Diamond, not the one I'd want. Not the one I want.
How about Drake?
Drake would be fun.
That would be really cool if they covered Drake.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Lenny Kravitz.
I could see them doing. Is the song called My Way? Is it Gonna Go My Way? I forget the full title of the song.
Are You Gonna Go My Way? That's Jet, though. I think that's a Jet song originally.
Is it? Oh, what about
Are You Gonna Be My Girl? Is that what you're thinking of?
No, Are You Gonna Go My Way? I thought that was Lenny Kravitz.
That is Lenny Kravitz. You're right. I'm confusing it with another.
You're thinking of Are You Gonna... I don't think Jet is Jewish.
I don't think so either. One that we were talking about before we started recording, Lou Reed. Wild Thing.
I mean, that would be very cool.
I mean, that would be an incredible one. Dire Straits, Salt and the Swing, the lead singer's yours. You mentioned Rush. Rush would be Rush awesome.
Dave Grohl's like a rock. He's like a music. He's very into the history of music. So, you know, a band like Rush, a guy like Bob Dylan, these people who just have kind of left, didn't necessarily make great songs, but kind of left their imprint. You know, are considered part of the history of music and not just great musicians. The Beastie Boys certainly fall into that category.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's where Dave Grohl is going to want to look.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's going to want diversity of genres and everything that comes with. So, again, I think Bob Dylan would make sense. I would love to see him like Simon and Garfunkel. I think Simon and Garfunkel, one of their songs is a lock because that's not a Foo Fighters vibe. That's a folksy, mellow rock vibe. That's not what the Foo Fighters do. Same thing with, like, the Carole Kings of the world. It'll be interesting. I do have a prediction. I think they're going to close out with Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, because that's arguably one of the greatest songs ever written, arguably one of the most well-known songs ever written. And what's more fitting for obviously a religious celebration than a song called Hallelujah? Which right. I used to sound, I don't know about you, but we used to sing it in Hebrew school. Even we had before we'd go to Hebrew school.
I don't remember doing that, but I never paid attention to Hebrew school, so I might have missed it.
That's fair.
So okay, last thing on this topic here, which, because I know you're a big fan, which Billy Joel song do you want them to do?
My favorite Billy Joel song of all time is Vienna, like by a mile. I love that song more than anything. So I would like to hear Vienna. There's not really drums in that, as far as I remember, though. So, it's you need the accordion, or you can do that on the keys. But Vienna would be great. I think Dave Grohl would sound great doing Vienna. New York State of Mind is also a great one. People from New York think it's overplayed. I love that.
Yeah, see, I don't know how Dave Grohl from Seattle does that. Have I told you my weird Billy Joel take?
No, go for it.
My favorite Billy Joel song is We Didn't Start the Fire.
That's a good song. Definitely not my favorite. He could do that because it's upbeat.
People hate that song.
It's fine. It's fine.
I don't know why they hate it. It's a very fun song. Is it Mozart? No, it's not like it's a musical masterpiece, but it's fun.
It is fun. It's just, I can't, it's one of those things, like, I listen to it once in a while, but I'm not going to put it on any one of my playlists.
If Vienna, it comes to the radio, I will change it.
Yeah, I'll probably listen to it if it's on the radio. It's a good song. It's a good song. I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't. See, it's
Dave
not
Grohl's
a top
like
five.
Goofy guy. It's a goofy song. I could see them doing that. Like, they're not going to do Piano Man.
No, definitely not Piano Man. Scenes from an Italian Restaurant would probably be number two. So okay. one of those two songs. Vienna's just such a beautiful song, though. I honestly, forget about Billy Joel. That might be one of my favorite songs of all time. in general. So I'm pulling for that one personally. But we found out that Billy Joel is baptized. He's ethnically Jewish, though, so we'll count it. We need him on our team.
So, I mean, it's going to be fun. Again, anytime you're talking about, you know, Bob Dylan to Billy Joel to Drake to Rush, you know, it's going to be interesting. Seven.
Amy Winehouse.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of people.
They can't do Rehab. He can't do Rehab.
It's a great song. I mean, it was a little foreshadowing, right? But
I just think that's the thing. I wonder if the circumstances with Kurt Cobain, if that's just something that he wouldn't, because that's going to bring up. He tries to distance himself from that as much as possible. And I mean, that's going to bring up a ton. Everybody, you know, everybody from what's his name? Have you ever seen the interview he did when he debuted My Hero? Howard Stern on the Howard.
Oh yeah,
Stern.
The acoustic.
Right, and Howard Stern asked him 40 times if it's about Kurt Cobain, and he keeps saying no, and Howard's like a jackass about it. So
yeah.
If he does Rehab, it's just going to be people, oh, Kurt Cobain. So I don't think he'd do Rehab, but Amy Winehouse is an interesting one.
Amy Winehouse, and that's the only song I know from Amy Winehouse. So maybe he doesn't do Amy Winehouse. She has a beautiful voice, though. She had a beautiful voice.
So hey, we'll see. Next seven nights – you get a cover every night from the Foo Fighters. It's already went up. It's Sabotage by my brain Beastie is Boys. Shutting off. Beastie Boys, thank you. It is Friday at 4:00.
What's your lock? Like my lock is Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Leonard Cohen.
I almost feel like it's cheating making that the lock. But can I lock in a performer instead of a specific song?
Sure.
All right, Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I hope not.
I think they have to do Bob Dylan. So
I think Simon and Garfunkel, either the group or Paul Simon, that's an artist lock, in my opinion. Because
Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler, the Hanukkah song.
Does he just do the Hanukkah song? Screw it.
He should do that. That's actually not a bad idea at all. Because I don't think that's a part of it. It's just artists. So
right, it's just artists. So
we'll see.
We'll see. That'll be fun. You're not a Taylor Swift fan, are you?
No, I'm more excited. I was Kid Cudi.
What'd you think of his
Kid
album?
I haven't listened. I gotta listen to it now. But I love Kid Cudi back in the day. Man on the Moon 2. There are a few other ones there. He had like three or four unbelievable albums. And that was he was my guy in like middle school and high school. Mostly high school, but he was my guy. So I'm glad he's making music again.
All right. So there you go. Plenty of good music on the table as you get into the holiday season here. That'll do it for us this week. We'll have a new show next week. We got the Celtics right. I think they don't debut next week, do they?
The 15th is their first preseason game. The regular is the 23rd against the Bucks.
23rd, okay. So maybe we squeeze a little Celtics preview next week. We'll see. Ooh. Check it out on Twitter at Calling the Podcast, online on clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.